sahana bhavatu, sahanau bhunaktu, saha viryam karavavahai, tejasvinavatitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti. Bhokta swasyaiva bhogaya patijayatim icchati esha laukika vrittantah shrutya samyak anuditah shrutya samyak anuditah bhokta swasya eva bhogaya pati jaya adim icchati eshaha laukika vrittantah shrutya samyak anuditah. If you remember in first 200 where we left off, we say, because of due to ignorance, due to aviveka, a person having superimposed on themselves, on the atma, having superimposed on their mind, etc., their mind and their body, the kutastha atma, brahman, having superimposed that, having superimposed the kutastha atma onto the mind, then this enjoyership, doership, enjoyership becomes real, right? Because I take myself to be the mind. I've superimposed my being on the mind, and my mind is the knower, the seer, the doer, the enjoyer, right? And so having done that, then of course I take this enjoyership to be real. I am the enjoyer. And if I take my being to be an enjoyer, then of course I don't want to give it up. That would be like committing suicide. But if I take the Atma, the self, to actually be the enjoyer, the doer, that's my swarupa, then there's no question of wanting to give that up, because that would be giving up what is most dear to me, which is the Atma. So that's the problem with the superimposition. If I take me, the one who is most dear, to be something else, then that something else I won't give up, because I take it to be me. It's a common sense, right? So that was the previous verse. So now he's going back to here the differentiating the nature of the enjoyer and the enjoyment. So he says, the bhokta, the enjoyer, swasya eva bhogaya, for his or her own enjoyment. Swasya means one's own. So the enjoyer, for their own enjoyment alone. Eva, alone. Okay? That enjoyer, pati jaya adi ichati. That enjoyer, ichati, desires a husband, wife, etc. Why do they desire the husband, wife, etc.? For their enjoyment. For their own happiness. That's why they desire it. They had a verse like this previously. Now they're coming around again. This Vijayaranya is coming around again. And he says, Esha laukika vrittantaha. This laukika vrittanta, this worldly vrittanta. Vrittanta means situation. Things that happen in the world, right? This vrittanta, this is something that happens everywhere. This is an event, a happening in the world. That I have a desire for this, that, or the other thing. And who do I have that desire for? For whose enjoyment? For my enjoyment. I desire you, not for your enjoyment, but for my enjoyment. This particular way of things is being said again and again. Anuditaha means over and over again. It's said over and over again, samyak, very clearly. Samyak anuditaha. Anuditaha. It said over and over again, very clearly by the Shruti, right? Because actually, there's a what is critical for us, for somebody who is searching for moksha, and what is critical is the same thing that is critical for all beings. All beings are not searching for sat. So give me some existence. Give me some existence. We're not searching for consciousness, more consciousness, more consciousness. We're searching for ananda, for wholeness, for fullness, for love, for happiness, for that sense of well-being that all is well with me. Right? And we can think that, in fact, the continuation of my existence, if I were to know that existence continues on, then I can relax about not. I can relax about that. And that is conducive for my ananda. You know, that my consciousness, that I'm not going to lose consciousness, that consciousness is not subject to death. That also is conducive for my ananda. Just think about this. If recognizing that existence itself, my being, is stable, was not conducive to my ananda, I wouldn't care about it. The fact that consciousness is something that is not subject to death, if that wasn't conducive to my ananda, I wouldn't care about it. I care about ananda, that I am whole, that I am complete. That these are all words that are pointing to the same thing. I am whole. I am complete. I am loved. Why do we want a partner? Not so that I can be hated. Right? I want a partner so that I can be loved. I want a partner to love so that I can be loved. And it all comes down to that. And it's not I want a partner or anything for that matter. I'm just using partner because they're using husband and wife here in this verse. You know, I want a partner to love. I want a person to love. I want an animal to love. But I don't want to love the person or the partner or the animal. I don't want to love them and have that love be unrequited. I don't want an unrequited love. I want to love so that I can be loved. If my loving produces pain, then I would like to redirect my love someplace else so that it's not producing pain. Right? Because what I'm seeking is to be loved. Now, this to be loved to me is a very good translation of that. To be loved is a good translation of ananda. Because that being loved is a completed state. Loving is a is an active state. But that loving comes out of love. Right? Right? You, if you're loving, then who is the one loving? Is the one loving loved? Or is it empty? See what I mean? Loving comes out of love. And so that completed state is loved. I am loved. So the person who feels love, I am loved, that person can love. Now, all of the situations that you have in your life are meant to generate love or run away from situations that are taking away from that love. And so that's what we do. That's life. It's very, very simple like that. And so if one realizes that what the bhokta is seeking is ananda or love, right? Then we look like this, and it's the enjoyer, right? The enjoyer who is the bhokta. That enjoyer wants to be loved and is using all of these objects in order to be loved, right? And so the enjoyer doesn't really care about the object or the person. The enjoyer cares about the phala, the fruit of what that person can possibly give. And what that person can possibly give has not much to do with the person. It has to do with my own personal condition of being loved. See what I mean? That personal condition of being loved is not an object. Right? It's me. It's I, the enjoyer, am loved. See what I mean? And so everything goes back to the nature of the enjoyer who's experiencing love. It goes away from the object of the enjoyment. And so the Shruti is making this distinction over and over and over, and ends up saying, as we go into the next verse now, you should be paying attention to the bhokta, the enjoyer, not to the objects of enjoyment. Because the objects of enjoyment are secondary, subsidiary to the one who is having the enjoyment. So the one who is having the enjoyment, the ananda, is the bhokta. So we should go to the bhokta itself. See what I mean? So that's why the Shruti in many instances is commenting on this. So that's why it says, Esha Laukika Vritantaha, this happening, this common worldly happening situation is over and over again commented upon by the Shruti. So let's look at what he does with this. So he says, Bhogyanam Bhuktisheshatvat, Bhogyanam Bhuktisheshatvat, Ma Bhogeshwanurajitam, Ma Bhogeshwanurajitam. Bhoktaryeva pradanetoktaha, Bhoktaryeva pradanetaha, Anuraganta viritsati, Anuragantan viritsati. Bhogyanam bhoktra sheshatvat, Ma bhogeshu anurajyatam. Bhoktaryeva pradane ataha anuragantam. He's talking about what the Shruti is going to direct now. It says, Bhogyanam Bhoktrasheshatvat. Because the objects of enjoyment are subsidiaries, they're secondary to the bhokta. Right? They're, what's the word for that? They're subservient. The objects of enjoyment are subservient to the enjoyer. Right, they're meant to serve the enjoyer. Right, so they're subservient to the enjoyer. Because that's the case, he says, one should not, don't be attached. One should not be attached to the objects, because they're subservient to the bhokta. So the attachment shouldn't be to the objects, he says, rather, Bhoktare eva pradane ataha anuragantam viritsati. He says, the Shruti directs that attachment to the bhokta, bhoktari, right? Who is predominant, who's dominant, pradana. If we take the enjoyer and the enjoyed, the enjoyment is for the sake of the enjoyer, right? And so the enjoyer is primary. See that? It seems obvious, you know, but we don't usually think about it. The enjoyer is what is primary. Ataha, therefore, the Shruti enjoins, it tells you, it directs you to place your attachment in the bhokta. Direct your attachment or your desire toward the bhokta, toward the enjoyer, not toward the objects of enjoyment. Because it's the enjoyer, the nature of the enjoyer, that is experiencing the ananda. That's where the ananda is. So you have to direct your attachment to the ananda itself. Where is the ananda found? It's found in the bhokta, in the enjoyer. It's never found in the objects of enjoyment. You just think that the objects of enjoyment are actually somehow beaming the ananda at you. That somehow they're transmitting. That somehow those objects of enjoyment are transmitting ananda into your being to allow you to say, I am happy. But that's really not a possibility. It's true that the objects are doing something, but what they're doing is totally illusory. Because you superimpose ananda onto the object, that's the desire template, if I could only just have that, then I would be happy. But because you have that superimposition, when the moment you actually fulfill a desire, the mind becomes desireless because you fulfilled the desire. And in that desirelessness, where the mind for the moment just about erases itself because it's doing absolutely nothing, it's absolutely relaxed. It doesn't want anything because it's fulfilled a desire. And in that, in a sense, erasure of the mind becoming absolutely silent, that mind, like a still water bucket reflecting the sun, that mind, which becomes still, allows for the ananda, which is my own being, to reflect, the ananda of the self to reflect in that mind in such a way that then the person says, ah, I am ananda, I am full, I am complete, I am happy. They're totally dependent, this ajnani is totally dependent on that quiet mind to have that momentary experience. Right? But that quiet mind is brought about in true, by the fulfillment of a desire. But the fulfillment of the desire has nothing to do with the object. It has only to do with the fact that your mind had superimposed ananda on it. You fulfill the desire, the mind becomes quiet, and then that quiet mind reflects the ananda, and then I say, I am whole, I am complete, I am loved. But the I am lovedness is not coming from the world, it's the very one's own swarupa. So this is why, because ananda is what everybody seeks, to be able to say, I am loved. You can't say, I'm whole and complete, and I'm not loved. You know? You can say, maybe the world doesn't love me, and then maybe they don't. But you can't say, if you're whole and complete, you can't say that I am not loved, that you don't have that swarupa manifest in your heart. Right? Because otherwise you feel empty. You know, that's why I'm saying all these words are synonyms. Love, being loved, wholeness, completeness, all is well with me. You know, these are all synonyms of my nature. Okay, so now he says, because the all of these objects of enjoyment are subsidiaries of the enjoyer, then don't let yourself become attached to the objects of enjoyment. Rather, direct that attachment toward the bhokta, the enjoyer itself. Right? Okay, so let's do the next verse. We're going on, this is a little set here. Ya priti ravivekanam, ya priti ravivekanam, visheshwanupayini, visheshwanupayini, tvamanit. Anusmaratasame, Twam Anusmaratasame, Hridayan Mapasarapatu, Hridayan Mapasarapatu, Ya Pritihi Avivekanam, Vishayeshu Anapayini, Twam Anusmarataha Same, Hridayat Ma Apasarapatu. He's quoting a Purana here. Or at least paraphrasing it. And in the Bhasha, he just says it's from a Purana, but doesn't give the exact Purana what it is. But this is what the verse says. Ya pritihi, that love or attachment. Priti means that liking, that love. So, ya priti, which love, which is anapayini, that attachment, that love, which is anapayini means dhridha, which is so firm, so strong, toward objects, toward vishayas. It goes vishayeshu, for the avivekis, for the avivekis, those people who don't have self-knowledge, who don't have any viveka, who superimpose the ananda onto the world and then go after it. So for those avivekis, those who have no discrimination, who don't have knowledge, that attachment. Which is so strong towards sense objects, right? That attachment, Twam Anusmarataha Same Hridayat Ma Apasarapatu. He says that very attachment for me, who am remembering Twam, you, he's talking to the Lord, to the Atma. That preeti, that love, for me, the one who is keeping you in my mind. And, you know, anusmarami means remembering over and over again, holding you. Smr means to remember. Anusmr means remembering again and again, like holding you, holding the memory of you. So keeping you in my mind. So for me, who am keeping you in my mind, may that preeti, may that love never leave my heart, never go away from my heart. So, and may that preeti, which just as that preeti, that love which is so strong for avivekis, toward their sense enjoyment, so for objects of enjoyment, may that preeti be like that. May my preeti toward you, holding you in my mind, be that strong. Right? And may it never, never leave my heart. Right? It's a beautiful verse from the Puranas. So, let's do the next verse. He comments on it. Iti nyayena sarvasmat. Iti nyayena sarvasmat. Bhogyajat jata virakta dehi. Bhogyajat virakta dehi. Upasamhrityatam pritim. Upasamhrityatam pritim. Bhoktaryenam babutsate. Bhoktaryenam babutsate. Iti nyayena sarvasmat bhogya jatat virakta dhihi upasamhritya tam pritim bhoktari enam bhubutsate. He says, thus by this nyaya, and nyaya means logic, it also means like a popular maxim. And all he's referring, he says, iti nyayena, by this verse that I've just quoted, you know, by this popular idea, this nyaya, something that other people quote and is familiar with everybody. What is being said? He says like this. Sarvasmat bhogyajatat viraktadihi. May the one whose mind has vairagya, has dispassion, who's recognized this problem, that all of these bhogas, all of these bhogyas, objects of enjoyment, they're all time-bound. They can't give me anything lasting. So for that mumukshu, the person who has vairagya, upasamhritya, having withdrawn, right, from all sarvasmat bhogya jata, from the entire collection of bhogyas, right, having withdrawn what? Tam priti, that love, that attachment. So having withdrawn that attachment from the whole jata. Jata means the whole group, right? Sarva jata, the entire group of bhogyas. So having withdrawn the attachment, the love that had been projected onto the whole collection of bhogyas, objects of enjoyment, and withdrawn from them, bhoktari, and into the preeti is withdrawn from them and into the bhokta, the enjoyer, right? So it's like you're taking the love back. You're taking the attachment, the ananda back, withdrawing it from the bhogyas and then resolving it in the bhoktari. So then he says, doing that, enam babutsate, having done that, may they know, may you know then, may that one know, the vivakta dihi, the one who has vairagya. May that one then know, bubutsati, know who? Enam, that Atma, that self, the nature of that bhokta. The one who is the bhokta, the self, who is the bhokta? The Atma, really. The truth of the bhokta is the Atma. Then having withdrawn the love from all of these objects, the attachment, and resolved it back into the bhokta, then may that bhokta be known. That's what the Shruti directs. So now he gives a couple of really wonderful examples. Let's do this. Shrak chandana vadu vastra. Shrak chandana vadu vastra. Suvaranadi shupamaraha. Suvaranadi shupamaraha. apramatto yatha tadvat, apramatto yatha tadvat, napramajati bhoktari, napramajati bhoktari. So he gives an example. It says, shruk, chandana, vadhu, vastra, suvarna, adishu, pamraha, apramattaha, yatha, tadvat, na, pramajati, bhoktari. He gives a little example like this. Pamara, just as, he says, yatha, just as a pamara. A pamara is like just an ordinary person, like a working class person, like a, looks like kind of a blue collar worker who does an 8-to-5 over and over again, just as doing their work and whatnot. Just a regular person, regular Joe, okay. The thought says that when I looked it up in the dictionary just to get, you know. They say, actually they say worse than that. They say kind of a vile, lowly person. So, but I don't think they really mean that in this verse. It's just a regular person. Just a regular person. How regular person is apramattaha, diligent, not lazy or careless. But just a regular person in the world is diligent. They're not lazy or careless at all. Toward what? Toward shruk. Shruk is like a mala. You know, it's like a chain or a mala or a garland of flowers. Chandana. Chandana is sandalwood. So toward shruk, chandana. Vadu, the wife. Vastra, their clothing. Suvarna, gold, etc. So he's just listing all of their possessions, you know. So just how toward these, and major possessions, like of course your wife or your partner, you know, and your money, and then all of your clothing and your jewelry, you know, and your sandalwood, all these, which is considered, you know, something important. So toward all of these things, just as a regular person is not careless about these things, tadvat, like that, na pramajati. One should not be careless, you know, or lazy toward the bhokta, the enjoyer. You know? In the same way that a normal person, you know, takes care of their things, in that same way, one should take care and be diligent regarding the bhokta, the nature of the enjoyer. Okay? Let's look at one other verse here. Kavyanatakatarakadim Kavyanatakatarakadim Abhyasyati nirantaram Abhyasyati nirantaram Vijigishuryatatadvat Mumukshuswam vicharyet Mumukshu swam vichariye. Gets another example. Kavya, Nataka, Taraka, Adim, Abhyasyati, Nirantaram, Vijigishuhu. Yata tadvat mumukshuhu swam vichariye. He says, just as a person who wants to be victorious in a contest. He says, how that person will abhyasyati nirantaram. Nirantaram means continually, without break, abhyasyati, practice or study, either such things as kavya, poetry. Say there's a poetry contest. The poet who wants to be in the contest, wants to win, will be diligently studying with intensity, you know, in order to be the winner of the contest, whether it be kavya or nataka. Nataka is theater, drama, or taraka, the logicians. The logicians will also get into have big contests, you know, and go back and forth, and they'll be discussing some piece of logic, So that's called tarka. So whether it's for poetry or dance or drama or the musicians, or it could be music or sports, for a person who's entered a contest that wants to win it, then they will focus nirantaram without break, practicing that study. Abhyasa means, abhyasiti means to practice, to study over and over and over again. So like that, like such a person would do that, tadvat, like that, the mamukshuhu, the one who desires liberation, swam vichariyate, should tirelessly, right, nirantaram vichariyate, inquire into the nature of oneself. Swam means oneself. So the mumukshu should, like that, tirelessly, you know, do vichara. You know, do vichara means engage yourself in this teaching for analysis, for viveka. Do this vichara until you understand, right? So that you can then win the contest. But you know, I actually think they're great examples, because in Vyavahara, Vyavahara means just in your worldly existence, people do strive to attain mastery over something, right? Whatever it may be, they strive to attain mastery over something that's important to them. They have that, what we call upadati, you know, when we have this sadhana chatushtya, viveka, vairagya, then shama dhamma upadati, titiksha shraddha, samadhan shraddha. Upadati means the ability to commit yourself to something to the point of mastery, to not being a dilettante. Upadati can be called, some people just say it's sannyasa, but if you understand what they mean by sannyasa, it's the ability to keep yourself in line, engaged in something until you are successful, until you have mastery over it. And so now what Vidyaranya is saying, people do this in the world all of the time, like a musician. A musician in India, especially, they'll talk about a musician, it takes at least 12 years of dedicated study. They think it takes 12 years, in fact they'll say, it takes 12 years to gain mastery over anything. But when they talk about music, you must, you know, study, and that's with full commitment. That's just not part of the time. For full commitment, you study. That's what you're doing with your life, is you're studying music. Astrology, minimum 12 years. You know, committed study to become an astrologer, which is very important in India. So now Vidyaranya is saying, okay, these people commit themselves to gain an understanding, a depth, a mastery of all of these things, whether it be dance or music or whatever it may be. Like that, like they do in the world, you, if you are a mamukshu, you commit yourself to this. To what? To yourself. To vichara. To the vichara, to the gaining this knowledge. Vichara means an analysis. Just like this chapter 7 is a long analysis on one verse. It's vichara. She's taking this one verse, the first verse of chapter 7, and is, you know, parsing it. And analyzing and analyzing and analyzing, the verse is long gone. We're way, deep into the jungle of this verse now, right? But that's the vichara. So it says you do that vichara on yourself. The vichara, what's the object of the vichara? Is swam. Swam means one's own self. So just like other people in the world do it on, you know, wanting to be victorious in some contest that they've entered, you know, like in the Olympics, for instance, whatever, you know, you have a goal, in order to succeed, you know, to excel and to succeed. So just take that drive and put it here, toward knowing yourself. If you're a mamukshu, mamukshu who swam vicharayate, the mamukshu should do the vichara. In that same spirit, the mamukshu should do the vichara on one's own self. But let's do one more example here. Japayago pasana di. Let's see. Japayago pasana di kurute shatiyayata. Okay. Japayago pasana di
Shataya go pasanabdi kurute shatayayata kurute shatayayata swargadi vanchaya tadvat swargadi vanchaya tadvat shraddhyat sve mumukshaya shraddhyat sve mumukshaya japa yaga upasanadi kurute kurute shraddhaya yata swargadi vanchaya tadvat shraddhaya sve mumukshaya. One more example he gives. Just as he says, just as a person, what person Kurute does, he does japa, which is the mantra, yaga. Yaga are rituals, like the fire rituals for fulfilling, to get to heaven or to have a child, or so many different things do yagas. Or upasanas, meditations to get to Swarga Loka or to get Antakarna Shuddhi. So these are all first, the first part of the Vedas, different rituals and things that are enjoined by the Vedas, right? So here he says, a person will do all of these things. They'll do japa, they can do japa, rituals, upasana, etc. They do it with shraddha, shraddhaya, kurute, shraddhaya. Why? Swargadi vanchaya. Because of a desire, vanchaya means because of a desire for swarga, etc. To get to heaven or some other, for some other thing they want. They do all of these rituals and prayers and japa, upasana, different types of meditation. They do all of these things with shraddha in the first part of the Vedas. Shraddha means that they believe in the efficacy of the Vedas. The Vedas say do this and this and this, and you will get this. If you do these upasanas and these rituals, this japa, you'll accrue punya that will give you swargaloka, or will give you another a better birth next time. The Shruti will tell you all of this. Okay? So with that desire to get swargaloka, these people will do these rituals, etc. Rituals, upasanas, japa, etc. So just like that, like that, like them, who are doing these things with shraddha in order to get swarga, heaven, etc. So like that, shraddha jyat sway mumukshya, because of your mumukshutvam, because of your desire for liberation, they're doing it because they have a desire for swarga loka, for heaven. You're doing this because you have a desire for moksha. So because you have this desire for moksha, may you have that shraddha. May you have that shraddha in yourself. Right? It says, it uses here a verb. Shraddhajat means, may you have that shraddha sway in the self. Means in the atma, in the self which the Vedas teach. See, this is the idea. If you're within the Hindu culture, and the Vedas are your shastra, your scripture, and you grew up with the Vedas as the scripture, and you revere that, you have shraddha. I mean, you have shraddha. You have faith in the Vedas, in the truth of the Vedas. So the first portion of the Vedas talk about all of the different rituals and upasanas and japa and different austerities that you can do in order to gain swargaloka, say, for instance. And so you have shraddha in the Vedas to do that. And so with discipline, you've done all of those things. Now you're a mumukshu. You desire liberation. Those same Vedas tell you how to gain moksha, how to gain knowledge. So as a mumukshu now, because you are desirous of moksha, then shift your shraddha, right? From swarga loka and the different upasanas and whatnot to get me swarga, now put your shraddha toward the atma, which is revealed in the Vedas. The nature of the atma, which is revealed in the Vedas. So you've done it toward these things, Now that you're a mumukshu, you know, do it toward what the Vedas reveals to you to be the nature of the Atma. And the way for gaining that knowledge is through vichara. You know, it's through the shravana, manana, nibhyasana. And so put your energy there so that you can complete that. So that that mumukshutvam, that state of desiring liberation, can then fulfill itself in moksha, in liberation. And the fulfillment of the mumukshutvam into moksha, into liberation, is what? It's atmajnanam. It's the recognition of the nature of the self that you are. It has nothing to do, because the freedom, right? If there is any freedom for yourself, it's not going to be something that is based in samsara, that is based in duality. Because what you've realized as a mumukshu, the very thing you want to get free of is that which doesn't offer any freedom. Right? Samsara doesn't offer any freedom. There's nothing stable that can be gained here. And so every single thing in samsara, within duality, is subject to death. It's subject to birth and death. It's subject to change. And so there is no possibility at all of anything that's within duality giving any type of lasting ananda. What does that mean? It means that there's no place to relax. Samsara does not offer a place to relax except for brief moments of time. And even in those brief moments of time, the astute person will feel fear because you know that that moment of relaxation is only brief. Right? And so you'll be waiting as you're relaxing for its demise, for the end. That's how it is. And so I'm seeking for moksha, for something freedom from that. Is there anything that is free from that birth, death? From that constant change, is there any relaxation where I can really relax, and that I don't have to worry, that I don't have to wait, that for the, you know, the bomb is ticking, I don't have to wait for it to explode. I'm free of all of that, and so that Atma, that nature, that reality is what the Upanishads teach, and that reality can't be something that is. Belongs to samsara. It has to be something which is essentially free from samsara, free from time, free from space, free from change, and it has to be me. If it's not me,
what's the use?
Then what's the use? And if it's not me, there's a duality between me and it. And if there's a duality between me and it, once again, it's within time. It's within duality, it's within time, it's within change. And so the Upanishads are just the Upanishads are just a very thorough teaching, a pramana, to make you recognize yourself. And so what Vidyaranya is saying, use the Vedanta, use the Upanishads, the second half of the Vedas. If you're a mumukshu, then with the same shraddha that you use the first half of the Vedas to attain pleasures within samsara, or dharma, or well-being, relative well-being within samsara, now that you're a mumukshu, use those same Vedas to understand the nature of yourself through vichara, which is the means that the Vedas themselves give to you for gaining that knowledge. Mm. So. Good. That's enough. Let's take a minute.
Purnamadav Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om. On the website, if you go into the text, see, now I've lost my background. On the website, if you go into, there's home and then text, okay? If you go down to number 3, peace invocations, then there's Sahana Vavatu that we do.
The beginning of the day.
Right? Sahana. And then Purnamadav.
At the end of the class.
Right? At the end of the class. And there's also the transliteration. Okay? So that you, because, so that we, I want you to practice the swaras. And also for that number 3, if you go to, it says chanted by Swami Vagishananda. You can see Sahana Bhavatu, he'll chant Sahana, and then Purnamadam.
Oh, okay. Kevin, look on the other side. Can you show peace invocations, and on the right-hand side, by Swami Vagishananda.
It says, number 3, peace invocations, and chanted by Swami Vagishananda.
And then there's Sahana.
Sahana and Purnamadam.
So both you can listen.
Sounds like he's in a cave.
I met him.
Yeah. So if you want, any of you want to learn this is a good site. You know, the text site, there's a lot of different chants and things.
Oh, fantastic. A lot of chanting.
Yeah. Okay. And there's the Sanskrit with the transliteration, and then also Vagishananda and the chanting. That's nice. Hi, Connie. Hi, John. Julia. Catherine. Okay. Yeah. I want to show you that.
So you don't really love someone else. You fall in love with your
own. You love love.
You fall in love with your own love.
Yeah, the way to say it is you love love. You love love. We're attached to love. So you might as well recognize that that's what you really are attached to. And then do the vichara on that.
When you say you love love, then that you refers to mind, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the attachment of the mind.
Love, really.
Yeah, but part of the samsara is that the mind seeks love but doesn't know the locus.
Yeah.
Where is it? And so then what happens is, for everybody, it's a universal problem, universal nature of the creation, is that when you fulfill a desire, whenever you fulfill a desire, and of course that's for something out here, the mind relaxes, and so it experiences some love or ananda or happiness. And so naturally you will think, put two and two together, when I fulfill a desire, I become happy.
And so therefore, the object of the desire is responsible for my happiness. And still, until you start, you know, analyzing it and understanding what is actually happening, so then the idea is to get to discover what is the actual source of the love. Where does the love actually come from? And then what you find is, it's not that you become narcissistic, it's that, you know, you out of love, you can love. Which is true anyway, isn't it? You love others only when you are capable of loving. Out of love, you love. If you're loving somebody for love, then that's what we say is very needy. And then that love is highly conditional. I love you. Why? Because you're supposed to give me love. That's why I love you. It's a whole different thing is I love you out of love, from the source of love. And that's an unconditional love because it's not dependent on, you don't have to be this way or that way. So you're actually, to your partner and friends and people in your life, you're much easier to be with. You know, because you can care about the people not for, because you need to get something from them. Really, you're just really appreciating Ishwara in every person. It's very beautiful, actually. It's so freeing.
I have a couple doubts about how it's been for me personally. It's just that it feels, and it's probably not that important, but you run into, I think I get the basic thing of what it's saying, but it does feel quite dismissive of. Like, an attachment to a car is not the same thing as an attachment to a spouse, you know, and it feels a little bit like the verses are kind of putting them all in the same category. And the fact that our minds are designed for attachment, like, it regulates things like our immune system. I mean, it's extremely deep, you know, so I wonder how does one kind of reconcile those two things?
That's a good point, actually, but I think the first thing that comes to mind that may be slightly tangential is the Upanishads will use extremes, like, for instance, the person who thinks that he's a killer or has been killed doesn't know the Atma, right? Because the Atma is neither a killer nor killed. Okay, so that's extreme. It's not saying... because then somebody can say, oh my gosh, I mean, and this is something that people do say. Oh, you mean you're saying that it's all right to be a killer? Mm. Or, you know, it's all right to be a killer because the Atma is not a killer. And so I can kill you, you know, or I can do anything that I want and nothing happens to me. And so that becomes dismissive in a way. But they're actually just using an extreme example there. In order to show that there is nothing, the Atma is not a doer, period, no matter what is done. And so now, here in this situation, what you're saying about the instincts, the immune system, all of that kind of stuff is true, and how important the whole attachment theory is to being a human being. That's all there, that's all true. But whether it's a car or a human being or anything in the creation, that thing is not the source of love. The source of love is the Atma. Right? So that is the point. Now, if we go kind of into samsara, into duality, and we see what are the needs of a human being? There are like archetypal, I would say in Jungian language, very archetypal needs. There are attachment theory, all of these type of things. That's all there, true. It's all like hardwired. Like you couldn't, they talk about this in the Shastra, like for instance, if you have a child, no matter how much Vedanta you have, no matter how much you recognize with aparoksha jnanam, I mean direct, immediate nishta in yourself, there is no way that the parent is not going to have attachment and worry and all kinds of emotional life around their child, because it's hardwired. However, for a jnani, the stability of the self is still pervasive, even though that hardwired emotional reality is going to be something you experience, because the attachment is hardwired. It's not going to go away.
Mm.
You know, it's built in.
Mm.
However, you still understand the dynamics, and the changelessness of your own presence is still approach. It's still completely present. But you have an emotional life that is hardwired because of... And that hardwiring of the emotional life between you and your child, and then with your spouse, that's another type of a relationship. It's not as intense as the child, but it's still another type of relationship. That knowledge and understanding of Ishwara gives you a little space in spite of the hardwiredness of it. You have Shraddha in Ishwara, and you have a recognition of the source of your own Ananda, which allows you to give more space to your child and to that relationship. There's less neediness. Does that make sense? It's not that it's not going to be there, though.
So the attachment doesn't just evaporate. I mean, it's
no.
there.
It's
and
there.
Seen.
It's there, it's felt, it's experienced.
Is that part of the karma?
Yeah, it's the power of the karma.
Of the karma.
But it's also just part of the nature of the creation and the nature of being a human being. You know, like the...
So
like
what do you do? Place it in the upadhi then? Or
it is in the upadhi, yeah, definitely.
It's part of Ishwara, really.
It's part of Ishwara, yeah.
So I mean, to see that that's part of Ishwara, mm-hmm. not functioning.
Like and those that emotional attachment, I mean, that's absolutely necessary for the little child to survive. And their little cute little smile, you know. So they're 24/7, and you just, you know, absolutely exhausted and don't know how you can go on for another day, you know. But then they give you that cute little smile, and nothing matters, you know. Yeah, it's amazing. Bugle on.
So you should see that as more as Ishwara then, or
it
I mean,
is
what
is it? It is all Ishwara, and there's a lot of, you know, kind of emotional. And they even, and another thing, this is not tangential, it's just another example. There's a story that Swamiji will say, tell about. There's a, in up in Rishikesh, they were having a debate between a Dvaitin dualist and an Advaitin, and there were a lot of people attending the debate. But in the middle of the debate, a tiger comes up and disrupts the whole thing, you know. Because when a tiger comes, you have to run, you know. So what happens was the Dvaitin sees this tiger, tails everybody, jumps up, runs and scampers up a tree, along with everybody else. Right? And the Dvaitin also. But when the tiger had left, and the Dvaitin and the Advaitin come down, the Dvaitin says,
see?
And so the Dvaitin says, yeah, Mithya tiger, you know, Mithya climbing the tree. You know, but what I'm saying is that your survival instincts, those are instincts. You know, they're going to kick into place. And they should kick into place. That's what they're there to do, you know. Another story, this one is a true one. We were in Rishikesh at Swamiji's ashram. This is in the early 70s. And that ashram at that time was pretty rough. It had been, it's not like it is now. It was
primitive.
Still pretty primitive. Yeah, primitive. And so Swamiji was sitting out on his little veranda, which was ground level, you know, and having satsang. And there was a young girl, I mean, 19 or 20, she was attending some of the talks, was just walking not very far away, but Swamiji all of a sudden jumped up off of his asana, where he was just sitting cross-legged there. He grabbed the stick, took, and this happened in maybe 5 seconds. grabbed the stick, ran two or three steps forward, and wham, killed the rattlesnake that was right there, apparently ready to strike. And it was something that just went like that. You know, and there was no thought. The thought, there was a movement to take care of that situation. It was the instinct, you know, and the rattlesnake died because of that. But it was him or the girl, the rattlesnake or the girl, and it wasn't, there was nothing there to stop that. And that was Swamiji himself. He commented on it. That what that was, it's not time for thinking, it's time for action. You know?
Well, was it his volition, or are you saying that it's more of just a part of nature working that way?
I think it's like part of nature, because there's, it's an instinct.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like the tiger coming, you jump up the tree. It's instinct.
But why in that case, that story where you say where Swamiji was doing this with the matches, but then he got shocked when they all caught on fire and he didn't like that he got shocked?
Yeah, that's another one. That's
why would he not like it? I mean, it seems natural to me if you're trying to do this and the whole thing of matches goes up in your hand, you'd naturally be shocked. But you're saying, you said, I think at one point, that he didn't like that.
He didn't like that. Yeah, that's another story. That's interesting. It's a little bit, I think it's a little different. Though, because he would have liked, he was had in one hand, he'd seen somebody do this trick, you know, where you have a book of matches and then you can light a match with one hand. So he'd seen somebody do it. So he was playing around with this, trying to do it. And what happened was the whole book caught on fire and kind of, you know, and so it startled him. And so he didn't appreciate being startled like that. He would have, you know, he wanted to, would have preferred that he had just, you know, sized up the situation and responded to it.
Oh, okay. So yeah. It wasn't that he didn't like that he had... I thought that that story meant that he didn't like that he didn't have some kind of control or something over his reaction.
No, that is what it meant. Yeah, he would have... That is what he meant.
Oh.
He would have preferred that when that had blew up,
yeah,
that he would have handled it. But not been startled.
Oh.
Yeah. But it's just a small...
Startled, really. It's just more Ishvara, right?
Yeah. But he was making a point, right? He was trying to make... I don't even remember what his point was, actually. But he was making a point that, of alertness. I think he was talking about alertness.
Oh.
You know?
So what do you do when you see attachment? I mean, do you blame yourself for having that, or how do you ease your way through this experience?
For us, it's never a matter of blame, because blame is actually something
counterproductive.
Destructive. Yeah, counterproductive. It's destructive. But it's a matter of understanding, you know. So it's bringing in the truth of the situation, like what is the nature of yourself, what is the nature of Ishvara.
Mm.
What is the nature of that attachment? What is it that you're really looking for? Just spending some time with it, you know, with your knowledge, your Vedanta knowledge, but also just objectifying the situation a little bit. And for you, bringing in your knowledge, you know.
Yeah, Swamiji, when he teaches now, he talks about this kind of thing so much, it seems. I mean, that almost seems like one of the main things I get out of being with him is when he's teaching about like how you accept other people, but also just this accepting yourself, you know, and seeing like you can't be another way, that's all Ishvara
is. That's right. He's putting a lot of emphasis on that. And it's very helpful also because, you know, the critical voice just creates tension and hatred. Just you can see in the world, like at the workplace, or if you have a difficult friends or situation, when you have to deal with somebody who's critical of you, who doesn't like you, who's critical of you, or whatever, how that makes you feel, it is so debilitating to have to be in the presence of somebody like that. Who's that way toward you. They might like everybody else, but they don't like you, or whatever. That's so debilitating. And so if you're carrying around like that type of an interject, that type of person inside of you who thinks that way toward you, then that's enervating. You know, it just saps the life and energy out of you. You know, and so it's so hurtful. And it's not that, I don't believe it's that hard to change once you're aware of it. Because the other voice, it's not like you don't have the other side. It's not like you don't have the other person who cares about people, who's been loving, who's been helpful to others. It's just that person you've never turned toward yourself. And so when that critical voice, you know, comes, then you can call on that part of you that is kind and caring and say, no, don't think like that.
Well, it sounds like a constant kind of differentiation all the time, then.
Well, it is, especially initially to become aware of the different ways you talk to yourself. Usually it's just going on. We don't think about it. It's going on, and it's creating the mood unconsciously. But once you become conscious of it, and you say, oh, you know, you realize how you're talking to yourself, and then you say, no, I don't want to talk to myself that way, just like I wouldn't talk to anybody else that way, hopefully. You know, if you talk to somebody else that way, you feel terrible. Or, if somebody on the outside talked to you that way, you'd kind of try to avoid them, try to get away from them.
And you know, that kind voice is like, in some sense, it can deal with like the child or something. But then there's also, that way Swamiji shows it too, the logical voice can even deal with the older person in a way. Because there's a logic to why you are the way you are. You know, that's even sort of a mature way of seeing it, don't you think?
Yeah. And that's what he'll do there is... when you objectify the whole situation, say you're hurt, for instance, in a situation, you objectify yourself in the situation and the other person, for instance, and then you start, the logic is this, seeing what was the cause-effect, you know, this caused that, and then this, and then that, and that, and that, and that, and that's how we got into this situation. So then you see all of the feelings on both sides is just a natural byproduct of this cause-effect situation. And then you see all of that as Ishwara and just Ishwara's laws. And here we are experiencing it, you know, experiencing the outcome. And that takes it away from the personal in a way and from blaming. He does that really well. He's doing a lot of guided meditations like that. We could do some of those in here, too. I did a lot of those with Swamiji, and they're very nice.
Say that again?
I'll do some of those in here also.
Oh, good.
I should give you that. I keep forgetting that. The whole week-long of meditation he did, just on that.
I have that, too, with the Vedanta Sara. He did days on it. But yeah, I'd like to see that.
Yeah, I mean, the whole course was just on that.
Oh, yes, that's right. I would like to see that.
The whole course.
Maybe I'll put it online. Put it online for
that'd
us.
That'd be great.
I'll do that. As soon as I get it from Durya, I'll put it on. You can listen to it. I'll put it on the India site. Does everybody know that? arshakulam.org/india.html.
Oh, there's one.
I haven't put much on there for a long time.
But what is that?
A lot of Swamiji's meditations are on there.
But that is lectures in India.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
And other things.
Other things, yeah.
Those are the secret sites. Yeah. Just because they're private materials that's just for us. You know, like these talks, if nobody would mind, Swamiji would never mind if I put them on those. On the site that's just meant for our students. Yeah. But if I made it available, like, and that's, you know.
Oh, like a little black lab.
Yeah. But this is a site that's just for us. Hi Jagadish, thanks. Hi Catherine.
When you said that we're so far into this, like we're into the deep jungle, it's like, yeah, and a cat, striped cat, like a tiger, cross her path.
Little Tibby. I'm attached to Tibby. Oh, yeah. She's just so sweet.
When you said that, in the example it says, the way we are attached to all the external things, or we pursue something for scholarship or mastery, that way we should be attached to
the study
of Vedanta.
Or the self, yeah.
Okay, but my question is, isn't that necessary for Vyavahara, like attachment or towards mastery over something?
Yeah, that's fine. There's no conflict there. But if you, because we have to manage here.
Right, yeah.
But what about, what are you doing it for?
Oh,
because... If you think that
that's
no,
it may happen.
That's the problem. Oh. And that's for the mumukshu is recognized it won't.
Okay.
It won't. Mm-hmm. And so the same type of fervor that you can give toward becoming an expert in the field, in a field out here, you can give that energy to knowing yourself.
Yeah, because those people that train for the Olympics, they do it for years.
Yes, we can be Olympic trainers.
They don't see.
Well,
it's that upadati, though, that being able to stick with something until you understand. And that, I think for a mumukshu, that's natural, because there's not an option. You know, it's not like you can just go... do something else,
yeah,
you know, and it's going to solve the problem. But now, there's something else to understand about that. In terms of gaining antakarna shuddhi, purity of mind, you know, the karma yoga and all, there are so hundreds and hundreds, countless ways of being in the world, exercises to do, whether it's, you know, something like qigong or yoga, or there's just so many different things that different meditative exercises we can do in order to help the mind, help the body, that type of thing. But even those, all of those only give temporary results, all of them, as wonderful as they are, but they bring the body mind into a balance that allows it to be able to gain knowledge. Your karma yoga also, it is relative, but it brings, that those attitudes bring the mind into a level of shanti, of peacefulness that allows for it to gain knowledge and actually solve the problem. The solution to the problem is the atma, the self. Samsara, anything that exists in samsara, is not the solution. Right, even though we can shine it up, you know, and make it conducive to gaining knowledge, if you don't gain knowledge, then it's just going to be shiny as long as you're polishing. Mm. Because all temporary. Everything can in continual flux. And so we do have to, as long as you're alive, you know, you have to keep taking a bath and you have to keep cleaning your house and you know, you have certain ways of being in the world that work. And we will keep doing that, and that kaushalam, you know, that gaining a certain expertise in being in the world and handling situations, that goes on increasing and increasing and increasing. That's not moksha. That makes your life better in the world. It's not moksha. It's still, everything is maintenance, maintenance, maintenance. The Atma doesn't need maintenance. Right? The wholeness of yourself doesn't need maintenance. It is what it is. It's not going to get worse. It's not going to get better. It is what it is. And that's the freedom, because the nature of the self is whole. And so even though you can go on becoming better and better and better in the way you handle the world, right? that goes on improving as you mature and you grow, even if you're samsari. But your Atma, once the Atma is known, because the Atma is Ananda, there is no growth there. That's free. It already is whole and complete, and there's nothing you can do to change it. Right? And so there's no becoming in terms of the self.
It doesn't mature.
It doesn't mature.
But your knowledge matures.
The knowledge matures, but the self doesn't mature.
Yeah.
And so as my knowledge matures, she says, which it will go on endlessly maturing, actually. But in that endless maturing, you gain more and more appreciation and harmonious living with Ishwara.
Mm-hmm.
But it can mature and mature and mature, but my self-experience will never mature.
Right.
Right? And so I remain exactly the same as the mind goes on maturing.
Mm.
So there's no increase in terms of self-maturation. There's increase in terms of emotional maturation.
You know, sometimes it seems to me, with the word, the use of the word you, like in class, the pronoun you, like we switch it back and forth between the mind and the karma. And like sometimes it just seems like in my own kind of sadhana or something, that almost like it has to switch over more to the Atma, you know, than, because you, it's still a superimposition.
When we talk, you know, sometimes we're talking from the standpoint of the Atma, sometimes from the standpoint of the mind, sometimes, you know, that's true. So, and that, if in the Bhagavad Gita also, we always have to say, is the Atma here referring to the mind, or is it referring to the self? When Krishna is talking, is he referring to himself as Krishna or as Ishwara? These all have to be made clear. And hopefully, say if I'm talking and it would be something that's obvious to me and I haven't said it clearly. In other words, to say if you're confused when I'm saying it.
No, it's not you. It's like I see with myself. Uh-huh. Like as I go about my daily life, how I'm thinking of me, right? I see a lot of times thinking of me is landing on the mind as me. No.
I think that'll get less and less. Mm-hmm. But even though you might say I'm thinking or I'm upset, there's nothing inside that thinks that you have become the mind.
Mm.
Your sense of self is always the same, Atma.
Yeah.
That's an important point, actually. Vidyaranya talks about that. That for when we've been there, so you might want to refer back to it, but basically it's this. When the samsari is talking, says, I am going to the store, they mean it. When the jnani says, I am going to the store, they're very aware that they're using the word I in terms of the physical body.
Okay.
Right? And then when they're teaching, they'll say, you know, I am Satchidananda. Because they know. But so the I is used just in normal parlance to refer to whatever the upadhi is doing the action.
Mm-hmm.
But not with any sense of myself being that. It's as opposed to saying, you know, the body is walking to the store, the mind is thinking, the eyes are seeing.
It's interesting because, like, emotions and all that, they seem so personal, you know? Well, they are, in a sense. I mean, nobody else has yours. You're set.
That's right.
But they, still, they're not you.
They're not you. But I am you. Right? There's only one self.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Catherine, I'm going to be gone. Actually, I just sent out an email. I'm going to be gone from December 23rd to January 2nd, and so the next class will be on the 3rd. The 3rd is a Sunday, so The next class we have will be the Panchadashi class on Sunday the 3rd.
Okay. Oh.
Have a great time. Last week.